It's nature's symphony, but it could be silenced. All those birds, the Florida grasshopper sparrow, eastern meadowlark, Florida scrub jay, Sierculean warbler, and northern spotted owl are being saved by human intervention. Remember that shocking 2019 survey? Nearly 3 billion birds, a third of the birds in North America, had disappeared since 1970. Climate change, habitat lost to plowed farms and development, cats. There are ways to help. Did you know you can buy bird-friendly coffee from farmers convinced to bring back trees on coffee plantations? How about birders paying a small fee on bird feed to go towards conservation? Anders and Beverly Gyllenhaal are here. Yes, they are aunt and uncle to the actors, but more important, they're journalists who traveled the country for a year in an Airstream. Their book is A Wing and a Prayer, The Race to Save Our Vanishing Birds. Anders and Beverly, welcome.
Hi, Robin.
Hi. Thanks so much for having us.
Oh, well, thank you so much for this book. Let's jump right in with a bird, the Florida grasshopper sparrow, only found, you tell us, in three small clusters in Florida around Disney World. And in one cluster, it went from hundreds of the birds to just 13 almost overnight. One scientist told you, Anders, we're in the emergency room. This is fast.
Right. They simply collapsed from a number of factors. And now scientists are trying to rebuild the population, and they do it sort of like helicopter parents watching over their every move, breeding them in captivity, putting them back out onto the grasslands, and then watching them try to build the population. And it is working. They're slowly bringing this bird back.
Well, and the reason they have to help them is one researcher called these little birds prairie potato chips. You know, they would just be a snack for other species. And by the way, we'll hook you up at hereandnow.org with the Gyllenhaal's website where you can find these projects like the White Oak Project there in Florida. But Beverly, these stories are repeated over and over. There's a woman who dresses like a whooping crane, complete with a puppet crane on her hand to work with birds. There's the Hoy family in Kansas, proving you can raise cattle and keep the grasslands for birds. You met people like Mike Parr at the American Bird Conservancy and David Noggle at the University of Montana, who point out, we have the facts. We know birds are disappearing. What's standing in the way of preventing that?
Well, you know, one of the problems, of course, is that habitat has gradually disappeared as the country has developed more and more. But what we're finding now is that with some particular types of approaches, we can actually coexist with birds. And you mentioned the Hoy family on their ranch in Kansas. They're finding out that what's good for the birds is actually really good for the cows too. And they did this by putting an emphasis on all of the native grasses and native plants. They pulled out all the plants and trees that didn't belong on these ranch lands. And once they got the habitat basically bird friendly, they came back.
And this is the answer to the question of why should I care? And that is that birds play this central role. They are the nature's workhorses. They pollinate, they spread seeds, they clean up the refuse of nature, and they fertilize the land and the seas. They're this crucial component in making nature work. And for many years, we didn't really pay that much attention. We could take birds for granted. Until now, we realize that's no longer the case. And so we have to stop and say, can we coexist? And the answers in this book are telling us that we can if we'll do a few things that make sense for both birds and for people.
Yeah. Beverly, you both write about things we've learned along the way. There were the timber wars in the 1990s. The logging industry in Washington State pitted against the northern spotted owl. Logging limited in order to protect those birds. People angry, environmentalists vilified. But environmentalists also, and people who love birds, also learned. What did they learn?
Well, you know, one of the things they learned is that we don't have to go as far as the timber wars. The cousin to the northern spotted owl is the California spotted owl. And so in California, they said, you know, it just doesn't have to be this way. So one of the things they needed to do was figure out where all of these owls were in this vast Sierra Nevada, millions and millions of acres, mountain range. So what they've done is they've put these recorders, strapped them all to different trees around, and then they listen to the hoots using these algorithms from artificial intelligence to figure out where the birds are.
It's a profound new development, one of the many technologies that basically give us a window into the world of birds that we've never had before.
Talk about more of these technologies. There's, you know, putting little devices directly onto the birds.
The best example of that was the cerulean warbler, this little blue bird that travels the length of the hemisphere 12 or 14 countries by the time it goes from one end of the hemisphere to the other. And if you track that bird, you can figure out where it lands, where it might be running into trouble. Then you can begin to figure out what can be done on the ground to save that. One scientist told us, you know, you can't do much for birds if you don't know where they are.
Well, talk about Hawaii and an effort to breed mosquitoes that would then mate with mosquitoes in Hawaii to eliminate a malaria that the mosquitoes were infecting the birds with.
Hawaii is the sort of dystopian future that we're trying to avoid. A third of the forest birds are gone from Hawaii. And in this case, climate change is just warming the temperatures, allowing mosquitoes to reach birds that they couldn't otherwise reach. So they're going to spread a kind of laboratory bred mosquito across the forest that will then mate with wild mosquitoes and act as a kind of birth control and hopefully stop the spread of this disease that's killing the birds.
What this 3 billion bird, one big number, showed us was the fact that, you know, over half the species in North America are in decline. We've got an avalanche of birds in need that are spiraling their way toward the endangered species list. But that's not where we really want to be working. We want to be working farther back upstream with birds that still have a chance, where the methods that they're using aren't quite as complicated as lab-bred mosquitoes, and where we can make a difference, and where it's also not as costly as some of these on-the-edge remedies.
Boy, there's so many of them. People are attempting to clone birds to bring them back from extinction. The carrier pigeon, that's another project. A project in California, it's a nonprofit called Revive and Restore, where they're freezing cells from endangered species in what they call the frozen zoo, you know, maybe bring them back in the future. But again, you talked about the things that birds do, Anders, and you mentioned in your list in the book, it's also our mental health. There's something so, I mean, it's the reason that you say we name our cars after birds, we name our high school teams after the Eagles. You know, Emily Dickinson wrote the poem, "Hope is the Thing with Feathers."
You know, that may be the most important thing that we can emphasize, is that birds speak to us in ways that nothing else does. And they are constantly speaking. They're everywhere. They sing to us. So there is a connection between people and birds that we hope will help save them if we're paying attention. It's not just the services they provide in the biological sense. It's also the beauty, the soundtrack that they provide.
Yeah. What can people do? You have a terrific list. Keep your cats inside. Don't let dogs run on the beach if they chase and kill birds. But this idea of maybe birders paying a tax, the way waterfowl hunters always have, and they pride themselves on being conservationists. How would that work?
Sure. It's pretty simple. If you look at ducks and geese from the 1930s on, they have developed a conservation empire, in effect, that raises money through taxes on ammunition, bows and arrows, et cetera, and that helps to fund conservation. You could easily put taxes on binoculars, bird seed. $4 billion in bird seed is sold every year. So there's plenty of care for the 50 million bird watchers. If we would pay a little bit, this could help fund conservation efforts for the birds that aren't getting attention right now.
There are people who will be willing, but we're also going to direct you to all these incredible nonprofits doing this kind of conservation work and projects like the Cornell Labs eBird or Project Feeder Watch. What's eBird and how can people get involved in that? And why, you know, outside of their own enjoyment?
eBird is essentially a phone app. As you're walking around your yard, wherever you are, you just tap in the birds that you hear or see, and then you can submit your list to the Cornell Lab, and 700,000 people around the world are doing this. The lab is able to take all of these sightings, and what ends up happening is all of a sudden they know where birds are healthy and they know where they're in trouble, and we're helping to fuel that science.
There's so much more. It's both heartbreaking and inspiring. The book is A Wing and a Prayer, The Race to Save Our Vanishing Birds. Again, we'll hook you up to everything at herenow.org. Anders and Beverly Gyllenhaal, thank you so much.
Thanks so much,
Thank
Robin.
You. Thank you very much, Robin.
Great to talk with you.